Welcome to Open Spaces from Wyoming Public Radio News. I'm Nikki Willette, filling in for Camila Kadalska. Fire managers are anticipating a busy summer after a flurry of spring burns got the season started early.
Fire seasons used to be in the summer months. We knew when we were going to be busy for wildland fire seasons. That's not the case anymore.
A new program aims to work with Native families to address grief and intergenerational trauma.
A lot of our adolescents are struggling, and they don't understand like where the grief is coming from or understand their feelings or healing.
And India's new consul general for our region met with state officials this week to talk clean energy, tourism, and trade.
This is my first visit to Wyoming, the most beautiful state, lush open spaces.
But first, a conversation with Governor Mark Gordon about working through disagreement. That's all coming up on Open Spaces from Wyoming Public Radio News.
Wyoming Public Radio now takes you around Wyoming. You'll hear about interesting stories and events from just down the street and around the state. Around Wyoming, weekday mornings at 6:06 and 8:06, and afternoons at 1:04 and 4:50. You can also subscribe to our daily roundup newsletter at wyomingpublicmedia.org.
This is Classical Wyoming, with great music 24 hours every day. If you would like to see the playlist, go to classicalwyoming.org.
Welcome to Open Spaces from Wyoming Public Radio News. I'm Nikki Willette, filling in for Camila Kadalska. Wyoming Governor Mark Gordon is the current chair of the Western Governors Association, which was formed to help foster bipartisan policy development, information exchange, and collective action on important issues in the West. The WGA is celebrating its 40th anniversary next week in California. Wyoming Public Radio's energy and natural resources reporter, Caitlin Tan, recently took some time to check in with Gordon about how things are going with the association and also how he thinks things are going in Wyoming, especially with regards to coal.
Governor Gordon, thank you so much for talking with us today.
It's great to be here, Caitlin. Thank you.
Yeah, well, really briefly, tell us a little bit about what the role the Western Governors Association serves.
The Western Governors is a regional group, both Democrats and Republicans. It's one that has been particularly important to Wyoming because we really do focus on regional area issues of interest, like invasive species, forest management, rural working landscapes, geothermal development, and then the one I did, which was decarbonizing the West. Couldn't find the right title exactly, but really all the things that are going on in the region that can address CO2 emissions and be able to capture CO2 in lots of different ways.
The annual conference is in California next week, and you're going to be speaking a bit about your initiative. Tell us, what kind of findings and recommendations have you guys found since you launched the decarbonizing initiative?
Well, last fall, we launched it by visiting Gillette and talking about the integrated test center and the great work that's being done there to capture carbon in emission streams from coal generation. And our idea there was really to highlight not only can we do and need to be able to address emissions, but we also can do some things with taking coal and turning it into really terrific products like carbon fiber, binder for asphalt. We then went to Idaho, where we talked about forestry management and how important that is to have well-managed and growing forests as a carbon sequesterer. We then went to Colorado and talked a little bit about direct air capture, also decarbonizing things that are really difficult to, like, for instance, cement, which takes a lot of heat and really uses met coal. So again, being able to look at the things we can do to reduce emissions from processes that we actually have to have. And I think it's really important as we look at this, to recognize this is both Democrats and Republicans coming together.
Well, and let's stay on that, because like you're saying, a big focus of the WGA is bipartisanship. And I am curious what that looks like in practice, especially when we talk about using carbon capture technologies to keep the coal industry going. You know, other states like Oregon and California are looking more at phasing out coal. How do you guys work through these really different, seemingly opposite goals?
Well, it sort of depends a little bit on energy production states and energy consuming states. With regard to this sort of central part of the West, we've been able, from North Dakota all the way down to New Mexico and out west to Idaho and Utah, really talk about coherence in policy. I think part of that is being able to engage the conversation with our friends on the West Coast to really be able to say, look, if the issue is CO2, that's our concern about climate change, let's address that. What you're focusing your policies on is to curtail fossil fuels. In that case, that's sort of counterproductive, because we're now putting your consumers at risk because we can't provide the electricity on a reliable basis. What we need to have, and I think this is where hopefully this eventually will go, is a much more robust conversation about how do we power this nation? How do we make sure we enact policies that help encourage innovation that will address this much better than just saying, let's not do that?
What about here, though, in Wyoming? I mean, there's a lot of controversy just within the Republican Party. For example, the far-right Freedom Caucus has continued to kind of imply they don't think you're doing enough to protect Wyoming's energy industry. They've attacked you for using the words climate change. What are your approach and values when it comes to working through these disagreements?
Well, look, I think the Freedom Caucus is a political caucus. They want to make themselves relevant somehow, I suppose. And they've taken to consistently picket things that we're doing. You know, I would say we've got approaching 60 lawsuits now across the waterfront. And the most recent attack has really come because they say, you know, on a timely basis, you're not taking the lawsuits as aggressively as we would. First off, you got to have something that you can sue on. Second off, you got to understand that suits take time to resolve. In fact, one of our biggest issues when it comes to things like endangered species, we're getting delayed in the court system so long that the effect of a lawsuit is really loss because we're not getting resolution. And so I think it's really important, Caitlin, that people understand that we are all working to try to figure out ways that we can protect our industry. I do take a certain amount of, delight in the fact that I have been engaged to protect our coal industry since I was first treasurer, and actually before that as well, worked for an oil and gas company. My commitment to fossil fuels is unassailable.
You mentioned the lawsuits, and one of those is aimed at the federal government over some new rules that are tightening regulations on coal plants. There's also been a proposal to end new mining in the Powder River Basin. Governor, tell us briefly, what's the range of things that could happen now? What would you want to see happen?
Well, we'll continue to work on all of these issues. As you mentioned, the Buffalo and Miles City Resource Management Plan comes out with a recommendation for no more leasing. We think that's absolutely contrary to responsible resource planning. And we'll continue to fight there and bring all kinds of issues to bear, both to the document itself on a legal front, but also in our conversations on it.
Do you think that some kind of decline of coal is inevitable, since trends show it's been declining since 2008, regardless of the president?
Yeah, Caitlin, my view is that I hope that doesn't happen. And I hope that for a couple of reasons. One is that it is dispatchable and it's dependable. We don't have battery technology. You know, we're working on TerraPower, a new nuclear plant that can help maybe address some of that. But that's still 10 to 15 years away. Meanwhile, coal has the ability to meet those needs. And I know there's a lot of discussion on carbon capture and how expensive that's going to be. You have to look at that in sort of context. When you build a wind farm, you still have to overbuild it by 30% because it's not going to produce consistently. All of the transmission infrastructure that goes into that's also expensive. There is really no option that's not going to cost money. And coal can be competitive, and I think it can be competitive with carbon capture technology because, you know, the first generation is always expensive and then it gets better as it comes along.
I just want to give you a moment to speak to the average Wyomingite. It feels like many of us are pretty worked up. It's an election year. You just mentioned all these federal policies that could have big implications on jobs, the environment. And then on top of it all, there's been that alleged wolf torture case in Sublette County that kind of has given Wyoming a black eye. It's even pitted neighbors, longtime friends against each other just here in Sublette County. There's a lot of issues that feel like you're either with us or against us. Governor, any tangible advice you could offer to Wyomingites?
Well, Caitlin, I would say on that note, I've grown up here, been 67 years in Wyoming. There have been times when we've been on edge with our neighbors, but we've always known that Wyoming is a very small town with very long streets, that our neighbors, you're going to run into them wherever they may be, and somehow pulling together, that's where we've got to come down to. There's been so much national invective that's come into Wyoming. It's affecting the way people in Wyoming look at each other. We need to remember our roots. We need to remember what Wyoming is about. We will go help our neighbor, even if we're kind of cantankerous with them. We'll go help them when they need help, and we expect them to come help us. We can make sure that Wyoming is a place that is a bellwether for what has made America great, and that is our ability to work together. We can agree and we can disagree, but we can always do that when we disagree better.
Well, we've been speaking with Wyoming's Governor Mark Gordon. Thank you for taking the time to talk with us about all things Wyoming.
Thanks very much, Caitlin.
Summer weather only recently started in Wyoming, but wildfires have already burned more acres this year than all of the acres burned in the state last year. What's more, fire seasons are lasting longer, but fewer people are showing up to help fight them. Wyoming Public Radio's Jordan Uplinger attended a press conference where officials talked about how they plan to tackle the hurdles that come with wildfires.
Firefighters, state officials, and a helicopter attack crew all socialize in front of a Forest Service maintenance shop in Cheyenne. To each side of the podium, they've parked ambulances and first responder vehicles. Governor Gordon is in attendance, and Smokey the Bear is expected to arrive later in the morning. Now, the Wildland Fire press conference is ready to begin. Kelly Norris, the Wyoming State Forester, steps to the mic.
I want to thank Governor Gordon. Smokey, you can come right on over here.
Norris says the northeast corner of the state is going to be particularly dry and that Wyoming can expect to have a normal to average fire season. But that's still a lot of fires. Around 800 wildfires are predicted this year. However, Norris also recognizes Wyoming's strongest asset in fighting those hundreds of fires, a bunch of local, state, and federal agencies working together.
Wyoming takes an all-hands, all-lands approach to wildland fire suppression. Interagency coordination is important for Wyoming as we continue to work together to protect our...
These agencies have already coordinated on large-scale firefighting efforts earlier this year. The Happy Jack Fire saw over 6,000 acres burn, and 7 fire districts, 4 local fire rescues, the U.S. Forest Service, and the American Red Cross, among others, responded. Cooperation is Wyoming's weapon, and the targets? Reduce fuels, recruit firefighters, and ramp up funding. Let's start with the fuels or combustible material. Vegetation in large, dry amounts creates highly flammable sources for wildfires. Governor Gordon explains that an invasive species is complicating the matter.
When you look at things like cheatgrass, you can see what the fire danger is. If any of you have seen cheatgrass when it's dry, it's like gasoline. It just explodes. And if you put a wind behind that, you can have extraordinary property damage. And I know Byron...
To combat cheatgrass and the likes, Wyoming has received a plethora of funding, almost $7 million in private and public funds. Wyoming State Forester Norris says the funding was successful in treating 13 counties and 2,500 acres of public and private land. Governor Gordon says the funds are also helpful for recruitment.
You know, Wyoming has always relied a lot on us, our volunteer firefighters. So it was a great thing this year to see recognition of the health benefits, recognition of how important it was to have proper compensation for what people...
Volunteer recruitment in general has been on the decline. Emergency first responder rates are down across the state and country. And as a result, counties and towns have had to assist each other well outside their local areas. State senators and representatives have attempted to address the issue through several public assistance bills, some of which are noted by Shad Cooper, the fire chief and county fire warden for Sublette County Unified. Those bills were Senate file number 3.
Signed into law, but that allows state employees who are emergency responders up to 24 hours of leave to respond to emergency incidents and help keep their community safe.
Senate file 8.
That bill allows volunteers to access the state's group health care plan.
And House Bill 66.
That's the firefighter cancer screening benefits.
The last issue for Wyoming and the country at large is the ever-increasing cost of fighting fires. According to Cooper, fire seasons weren't always this long.
Fire seasons used to be in the summer months. I remember, you know, when I started in my career in the 90s, we scheduled it. I mean, we knew when we were going to be busy for wildland fire seasons. That's not the case anymore. You know,
longer fire seasons do not necessarily mean more frequent or intense fires. But it does mean being prepared more often through mitigation, training, pay rates, and maintaining Wyoming's helicopter and air tankers used to drop water on fires. State Forester Kelly Norris says the cost of fires will ultimately increase over time.
It's getting more expensive because it's getting more year-round. We're needing more efficient equipment like aviation. We're needing engines. We're needing to bring in as much as we can, and that's across the United States.
But in the meantime, Gordon has advice for all Wyomingites this summer.
One of the most important components of making sure that we don't have an aggressive fire season is that we, as citizens, take care. That we don't burn our trash and walk away, that we make sure that our forest fires are out, that we don't do stupid things. We
will make sure. For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm Jordan Uplinger. Help in any way that we can.
The state was in court this week over allegations that it's failing to meet its constitutional obligation to fund public schools. That's up next on Open Spaces.
Hi, I'm Grady Kirkpatrick, inviting you to join me for Wyoming Sounds. Along with your favorites, you'll discover plenty of new music. We bring you NPR news updates, weather, and we'll let you know about events happening around Wyoming. Wyoming Sounds from 9 to noon on Wyoming Public Radio and 24/7 online at wyomingsounds.org.
This time on The Modern West, we find out all the crazy workarounds people have found for the lack of affordable housing in Jackson.
It's cold when you come back, and the issue then is like all your water freezes and like trying to dry ski stuff or anything like that. It's a pain. But once the heaters are going, it gets cranking in here.
Chasing the Dragon. It's episode 4 of our series, High Altitude Tales. Find it under podcasts at wyomingpublicmedia.org.
Welcome back to Open Spaces. This week, the state was in court for a trial brought by the Wyoming Education Association. In the suit, the association claims that Wyoming is failing to meet its constitutional obligation to adequately fund the state's public K-12 education system. That's even as the state has increased its per-student funding each year from about $1,200 a student in 1980 to nearly $17,000 a student in 2022. But according to the association's president, Grady Hutcherson, that wasn't enough to keep pace with inflation and rising costs, leading to the state's struggle to recruit and retain teachers and other support staff. Hutcherson told Wyoming Public Radio's David Dudley that those factors, among others, led to the lawsuit.
What was the action or the lack of action that compelled you to file a lawsuit?
I think the fact that the problem has existed year after year And it finally got to the point where we started seeing a negative impact on our students across the state in terms of the education they were receiving, as well as the impact that it has had on our education professionals across the state. We used to rank very near the top in terms of salaries and being able to attract and retain educators. And we've lost that advantage, and we now know that there's a huge struggle in recruiting and retaining educators across the state. So those were a couple of components that really caused us to have no other choice but to ensure that the state does what is right and what our students deserve.
Can you offer an example or two of what that lack of funding looks like on the ground?
There are many areas where we can look at specific examples and see how the underfunding has had negative impacts on students. Particularly, there are districts who used to provide a variety of types of programs, and those districts can no longer afford to offer those programs. So there have been programs that have in essence shut down or have been eliminated in districts across the state. I think another real compelling example is that from the year 2010 to 2022, the average teacher salary only increased $604. So when you're an educator or education support professional and your wages aren't keeping up with inflation, for example, sometimes you're forced and have no other choice but to leave or to look for other options of places for employment. And there are probably many other examples. You know, one of the other components within the lawsuit has to do with capital construction, which is an interesting issue because we do know that there are communities across the state with beautiful new schools, but then there are also those districts who have old and dilapidated school buildings, and those haven't been replaced yet. And so I think about whether it's springtime or back to school, and when the temperatures are hot outside, for example, I have colleagues who regularly tell me about their classrooms getting to be in the upper 80 degrees because of old buildings with lack of proper ventilation and air condition. So, I mean, those types of impacts are real, and they're affecting our students as well as education professionals on a daily basis.
What about this notion that the Wyoming Education Association is pushing for these funds to fund special programs?
I appreciate that question. You know, I had the good fortune and was in the classroom for 24 years. And I always tried to think about the student as a whole. There's the academic component, certainly. But I also know that if I have students who are struggling with, emotional or mental health issues, very little learning is taking place until those basic needs are met. So there's, in my opinion, there's no way that somebody can argue that the social and mental health and wellness of a student isn't part of education that we provide. It's unfortunate that some of the national rhetoric is trying to paint a different picture. Unfortunately, we know in the state of Wyoming, we regularly, and like I said, unfortunately, and regularly are highest in the nation with our youth suicide rates. We know that post-pandemic, that the issue of mental health and wellness, not just for students, but also for our education professionals, is of significant concern and needs to be addressed. And as a part of the lawsuit, there's not adequate funding to provide the services that are needed for our students so that they can ultimately be most successful in their learning and in the classroom. In providing counselors and mental health support to students, I would say is a basic need of not just every student, but of every human being. So we need to address that, and we can't look the other way. And I think it's unfortunate that we want to try and use national rhetoric to say that that's some kind of national program that we're pushing. It's based on the needs of what our students need.
What about the recent budget adjustment that the legislature passed? Roughly $70 million for the school year of 23-24. How does that impact schools across the state and also the lawsuit?
Sure. So that's the funding that was provided this past session for the external cost adjustment, which is what we are arguing they have not done regularly. So we're very grateful and appreciative that this past session they did provide that external cost adjustment. However, because of the fundamental flaws that exist within the funding model, by providing that external cost adjustment, it still doesn't provide for a cost-based model. And the example I'll use to maybe help people understand what I mean by that is if you look at the model, they have a base salary that they use for determining what teacher salaries should be in the district. But that amount that they use in the model is approximately $7,000 less than what districts are actually having to pay. So there's that huge disparity between what's actually happening versus what we see in the model. And that external cost adjustment, as I said, it's greatly appreciated as a step in the right direction, but it still is not enough to provide for that cost-based education that our students deserve.
I'm David Dudley for Wyoming Public Radio. Thank you, President Hutcherson. We've been speaking about the Wyoming Education Association's lawsuit against the state of Wyoming.
Thank you so much.
Wyoming Public Radio reached out to members of the legislature for comment on the case. They declined. Culturally informed care is at the core of the White Buffalo Recovery Center. That's an outpatient addiction treatment facility in Riverton and on the Wind River Reservation. Wyoming Public Radio's Hannah Haberman brings us this inside look into how they're helping tribal members heal, and a new program they're launching, which aims to address grief and intergenerational trauma for families.
At a white plastic table in an office in Arapahoe, Lance Oldman is pounding ground-up cedar into something a bit unexpected, an empty chapstick tube.
Fill it up with cedar and use a stick, push them out, and ache them out. Perfect little cylindrical circles.
Oldman is Northern Arapahoe and is a certified peer specialist at White Buffalo. Cedar, he says, is traditionally used to heal the mind, body, and spirit.
We'll say a prayer and we'll put them on the hot charcoals.
But Oldman says burning cedar in that way isn't always possible. So he and his coworkers set about figuring out how to make cedar incense, which involved a lot of trial and error. But a tube of chapstick sitting on the table gave him a eureka moment.
Bing! You know, it was just that little flash. You know, it's like, all right, man. So I pulled it out. Put some in there and push it out, and everybody's like, whoa, that's cool.
Making cedar incense is just one small part of what Oldman gets up to at White Buffalo. He's been working there for almost 10 years. The center supports all enrolled tribal members and tribal descendants, and offers both clinical services and a whole host of culturally informed programs run by peer specialists, like language and crafting classes, drumming, a 12-step medicine wheel program, and sweat lodges.
All our families and our communities are in need of this healing right here, right now.
Northern Arapahoe tribal member Luke Brown agrees.
The solution to addiction is not abstinence. The solution to addiction is connection.
He works at the White Buffalo office in Riverton. One of his big roles as a peer specialist has been facilitating Mending Broken Hearts, a bi-monthly three-day workshop that provides healing around grief, loss, and intergenerational trauma.
Mending Broken Hearts itself is an effort to help resolve unresolved grief and to complete some incomplete relationships. It helps us to look at where our trauma has stemmed from.
Brown says much of that trauma is rooted in colonialism.
From the wars, from the murder of our Native people in the past, and moving forward into the boarding school system where our culture was outlawed and in a way beaten out of young children in the boarding schools. That type of history still affects us today.
In the past, the workshop has just been for adults, but now it's expanding to include the whole family. Brown will be co-facilitating the new program with Kenzie Monroe, White Buffalo's adolescent peer specialist. She says bringing young people into the workshop is a logical next step.
A lot of our adolescents are struggling, and they don't understand like where the grief is coming from or understand their feelings or healing. And so I think that's good to be a part of that.
Monroe is Northern Arapaho and recently went through the adult version of the Mending Broken Hearts workshop herself. She says she came away with a better understanding of the ripple effects of intergenerational trauma, and says bringing the learning to families will hopefully have a sort of reverse ripple effect.
There's going to be that understanding and that forgiveness and that ultimate healing. I think it's a good thing.
Back in Arapaho, Brandon Brown says drumming is one way he has found healing.
I grew up around a drum. I mean, my dad brought me to the drum at a very young age, and my earliest memories is falling asleep at the drum. So, you know, now I'm sitting there with him singing.
Brown is also Northern Arapaho and started working as a peer specialist 2 months ago. He grew up in an alcoholic home, but drumming and staying connected to his culture have helped him.
That's what helps me in my sobriety, is being at the drum and expressing myself. And when I sing, it's like our cultural songs, it's like praying.
Brown is 36 and wants to share that tool with others. He says a lot of the people he works with are a generation or two older than him and may have been severed from their culture, but he's grateful he can share what he knows with them.
They really connect with me, and they want to learn more, or they appreciate what I got to say, because what I say is true and honest.
Above Brown's desk is a large drum, its sides painted blue with a white bison. As he talks about it, his eyes light up.
He's circle because of life, the circle of life. And when we drum on him, he makes a beat. And that beat is a heartbeat. And it's not only his heartbeat, it's heartbeat of our tribe.
Brown points to the crisscrossing ties making triangles all around the outside of the drum, which he says represents mountains and teepees.
Not only is it his heartbeat, but it's my heartbeat. You know, it's my love. This is my passion. This is the drum.
For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm Hannah Haberman.
Up next, we hear from the new Consul General from India for our region about his first visit to Wyoming to meet with state officials. This is Open Spaces.
Did you know that all 6 episodes of Human Nature's latest season are out right now? That's right. Season 9 of our award-winning podcast has a little bit of everything. A Wyoming man who spent his summer working as a night shepherd in Switzerland.
All I could hear was my breathing and the steps, and everything was so dark. And I just thought, okay, this must be what it's like to be an astronaut on the moon.
The story of one of the biggest animal rescues in history.
And I picked up the phone and they said, when can you get here? And so the next day, I actually took a plane because it never occurred to me what was ahead for me over the next few weeks.
And a woman who followed the gray whale migration hundreds of miles with her son.
I was exhausted one evening, fed up of trying to work. I'd had a really bad day. And so I was like, right, I'm not working. I'm going to read about whales.
Find Human Nature on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. That's Human Nature, one word, one N.
The Wyoming Public Radio app delivers great music 24/7. Stream Wyoming sounds, jazz Wyoming, and classical Wyoming. Download the Wyoming Public Radio app at wyomingpublicmedia.org.
Welcome back to Open Spaces from Wyoming Public Radio News. I'm Nikki Willette, filling in for Camila Kadelska. A representative from India completed a whirlwind visit to Laramie this week, meeting with the governor, local officials, and Indian students at the University of Wyoming. Wyoming Public Radio's Chris Clements spoke with Consul General Prakash Gupta, the head of the newly formed consulate in Seattle, about how Wyoming and India can develop closer ties.
Thank you so much for joining me today, Consul General.
Thank you so much for having me. This is my first visit to Wyoming, the most beautiful state, lush open spaces.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you is, what do you think about, you know, visiting our state after representing India and so many other more bustling metropolises?
Look, every station is a unique experience for us. We are in the process of opening India's first consulate in the Pacific Northwest in Seattle. And out of Seattle, we look after the 9 states, making it geographically one of the largest consulates in the United States for India. So we cover all the states from Alaska, Washington, Oregon, Montana, Idaho, North Dakota, South Dakota, Nebraska, and Wyoming. So what brings me here is that this is part of our consulate's territory. And since this is a first and unique assignment for me, I wanted to touch base with the leadership here in Wyoming. Had an excellent interaction with Governor Gordon Brown in the morning. And since then, have been visiting the University of Wyoming and in doing other engagements. So it's been fabulous so far.
Could you tell me and us a bit about what you spoke to Governor Mark Gordon about?
Yes. So it was a very good meeting. We discussed a possible roadmap for cooperation between India and Wyoming for the next 1 year. The areas that we focused on, one is clean energy technologies. And we are looking at doing a kind of a clean energy symposium somewhere towards next year, where we could bring the Indian clean energy companies and get them to interact with companies in Wyoming. That's for first quarter of next year. The other thing we discussed was cooperation in the higher education space, particularly with the University of Wyoming. And that covered a lot of areas, including joint research projects, joint faculty exchange, and possibly bringing to Wyoming a very unique, immersive Indian experience for a week called the India Culture Week for American students at the University of Wyoming, which will showcase a week-long experience of an Indian film festival, an Indian food festival, Indian cultural dance performances showcasing various states of India, an exhibition on Incredible India, on the tourism potentialities between Wyoming and India, and also a lecture series on eminent Indian personalities and things to do with which the young generation is interested in, artificial intelligence, quantum computing, and the likes. So that was in the area of higher education. And another thing we discussed was, I think, has good potential between Wyoming and India is trade in agricultural products. I think India is also primarily an agricultural country. We could bring in some good Indian coffee to Wyoming. We could bring in other products. And similarly, Wyoming could export its stuff from the agricultural space to India. I also realized that Governor has not yet visited India so far. So I requested him that India today is 1/6 of humanity, 1.43 billion people, the world's largest population, growing at 8.4% was our last GDP growth rate. It's the fastest growing economy in the world. It's the 5th largest economy in the world. And the plus part is we have a young demographic dividend, which no country has. So 65% of our population is below the age of 30 and between 18. We're talking about 950 million people. So I think there's huge potential for India and the US to work together, particularly with Wyoming in the context of clean energy technologies.
Do you think Governor Gordon would ever come visit?
We have an in-principle assurance of the visit being considered for next year. How the US processes work that forward is entirely Governor's call, but we have extended an invitation to him to lead a delegation to India.
Well, so to back up for a minute, what you were just mentioning about the clean energy symposium, what do Indian companies hope to learn about, I guess, our sector here in that area?
One aspect is learning about. That's one aspect of the piece. The larger aspect is how can India and the US work together on clean energy technologies and make it for the benefit of the entire world. That's where I see great potential in Indian companies working together with Wyoming companies, sharing experience, sharing expertise, technical know-how, and scaling it up in other southern settings. So in my view, there are individual success stories on both sides. And if companies work together, they can really scale up the canvas of cooperation.
And when you mentioned agricultural exports, what did you have in mind there?
From India, I am looking at getting possibly, as I said, India has a very good coffee called Araku coffee. US is a coffee drinking country. We'd like that to be introduced in this part of the world. It is very popular, I believe, in the eastern side of the US, in New York and others, and in Northeast Asia. We'd like to bring that here. We also believe there is potential for collaboration in the wines and liquor space. India is a whiskey drinking country. We'd like to introduce some of the Indian alcohol here. So these are some of the stuff that we would like to bring. From the context of Washington State, where our consulate is based, Washington exports a lot of apples to India, good quality apples. And large numbers they're going. Blueberries, cherries, nuts, these are things that are going to India. So if there are agri products in Wyoming which have a potential for India, we could consider looking at them.
What kind of assistance does the consul itself offer folks who are from India in Wyoming?
A consulate or an embassy primarily addresses in its consular function the interests of the Indian community stationed abroad. So if there are Indian nationals who have come into the United States from India and are holding Indian passports, we give them full range of consular passport services. We process their OCI cards, we process their visa requests, we process attestation of documents, we do death certificates, birth certificates, marriage certificates, because coming so far abroad here on foreign soil, they need a lot of guidance, mentoring and counseling, particularly for Indian students here. I believe there are close to 100 students studying at the University of Wyoming, and I was very happy to meet some of them here today in my visit to the University of Wyoming, and they're doing very well for themselves and for the university. Several of them have been PhD students in biological sciences, in the energy space, and are doing good. So what we have done as part of our counselor profile role is we have created a group of student coordinators wherever Indian students are studying, whether it's University of Washington, Seattle University, or Wyoming University. And we have information which the government of India has done for the benefit of Indian students studying abroad. So we have created this common WhatsApp group where we share this information and then they disseminate it to the wider Indian student community here. So there are many aspects in which we can take care of the interests of the Indian community abroad. And that continues to be work in progress.
What did some of these students tell you, I guess, just in general about their experience here in Wyoming? I'm just curious.
Obviously, given Wyoming's location, simple things like bread and butter issues of not having access to Indian grocery stores, which people in New Jersey or New York have easily, they remain a bit of a kind of a concern. But again, they as a good community, they do Indian functions. They do Indian Diwali festival here at the University of Wyoming. So it's a good bonding group that they have got amongst themselves.
Is the government of India itself considering any kinds of investment into sectors in Wyoming?
We would be open to investment. Again, many companies are investing, Indian companies are investing abroad. So if there are good investment opportunities, say in quantum computing, open generative AI, space technology, or agricultural, or clean energy, it's up to the private sector industry to take advantage of it. We can provide this information to them and encourage them to make the most use of it.
Thank you so much for joining me today, Consul General. I really do appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. I wish all your viewers all the very best. Greetings from a billion plus people of India. We recently concluded the world's largest election exercise in India. It was called the Dance of Democracy. More than 900 million people turned out to vote. And we share that thriving democracy with the U.S. and India together. So wishing them all the very best and hope some of the residents of Wyoming can get to visit and experience India soon with the consulate now being here in your area. Thank you so much.
That was Wyoming Public Radio's Chris Clements speaking with Consul General Prakash Gupta of India. Up next, the latest chapter in the series tracking fictional Wyoming game warden Joe Pickett is out now. We hear from the author. This is Open Spaces.
Hi, Daryl Brogdon here, host of the Retro Cocktail Hour, inviting you to join me for the music that's always served up shaken, not stirred. Whether it's TV crime jazz or tiki tunes, space age bachelor pad music, swinging soundtracks, or other incredibly strange music, it's on the Retro Cocktail Hour. Saturday night at 6 on Wyoming Public Radio.
You already listen to public radio, but what if public radio could listen back? It does on the NPR One app. Hear local, national, and international news plus podcasts based on what you like. The more you listen, the more it gets to know you. Download NPR One at your app store.
Welcome back to Open Spaces. Wyomingite and New York Times bestselling author C.J. Box released his 24th novel in the Joe Pickett series earlier this year. Wyoming Public Media's Grady Kirkpatrick recently spoke with the author about his newest book called 3-Inch Teeth.
For those not familiar with the Joe Pickett novels, can you briefly describe the main character?
Sure. Joe Pickett is a fictional Wyoming game warden. It is based on
a lot of different game wardens I've known over the years. And it's not only Joe Pickett, this is now the 24th book with Joe Pickett, and they've advanced in real time. So Joe's now in his 50s, and his three daughters have grown up and moved out, and he and his wife are empty nesters again.
All right. The novels are set in Wyoming, Saddle String and the Bighorns. And in this one, the story starts there, then moves to quite a few different areas around the state and even across the border in Walden, Colorado and North Park. What are some of the areas in Wyoming in this novel?
I love to highlight real small towns and in places that maybe aren't familiar to a lot of readers. So in this one, you know, there's the town of Saddle String, which is, you know, fictional, but set in the Bighorns. But also there's scenes set in Jeffrey City, Wyoming, and Hannah, outside of Laramie, in fact, and then back to the Bighorns.
Joe Pickett has to deal with two different kinds of rampaging beast, one animal and one human. There are plenty of surprises, twists and turns, and things do get Western in a big way. Without giving too much away in the story, can you set us up with what happens in the beginning of the book?
Sure. What happens in the beginning is that a fly fisherman, 25-year-old fly fisherman, Clay Hutmacher Jr., who we came to know in the previous book, is preparing to propose to Sheridan Pickett. And while he's fishing, he hears a big commotion on the side of the mountain in the canyon, and a grizzly bear runs at him like a freight train through the water into the river and takes him down. And that's the first of the grizzly bear killings in this book. And what Joseph starts to suspect that, you know, a rogue grizzly bear, or maybe even more than one, are roaming the state of Wyoming, attacking people in an unprovoked fashion. What's also happening is that a very bad guy who wants revenge on Joe Pickett and several others decides he can use the grizzly bear attacks as cover to exact revenge.
You wrote this book last year and published early this year, right?
Right. The book came out end of February.
There are some populations of grizzlies around parts of the West. Most are in the Yellowstone area. Some have traveled north into Montana. And there was a report of a grizzly just earlier this year that roamed to the east in the Bighorns, where this story's set. Did you have a premonition about grizzlies roaming east of their range?
Well, I had heard from some people in the Bighorns that they thought that they had seen grizzlies, or that grizzlies were present. I actually had the advantage of talking a lot with Dan Thompson, who's the large carnivore specialist for the state of Wyoming, and he helped me with the grizzly bear descriptions and their behavior and patterns. And I sent him portions of the book as I was writing it to say, you know, could this happen? Is this serious? And he did make the point early on, we have not seen any grizzly bear confirmed sightings in the Bighorns. But then just about a month ago, he sent me a text and said, well, I guess you heard about that grizzly we had to kill in the Bighorns.
Oh, my goodness. Having read all the books in the series, I appreciate the character development over the years, especially with Joe's family and his friend and accomplice, Nate Romanowski, who's a falconer and has a special forces background. Nate and his wife started a business and have hired Joe's now grown-up oldest daughter, Sheridan. Can you describe that business and how Sheridan became involved in falconry?
Sure. From an early age, which means many books ago, Sheridan has had an interest in falconry. And for a long time, she was Nate Romanowski's apprentice falconer. Nate is the master falconer. That's the terms they use. And in the last few years, she has gone to work for him. What Nate has done is come off the grid, or come back on the grid,
right,
I should say. Opened up a legitimate business, a bird abatement business. Those kind of businesses actually exist, where falconers are hired by people to rid them of problem birds. It could be ranchers, it could be refiners, golf courses. When they have populations of problem birds, a falcon in the sky will scare them away. So there's more and more of these bird abatement businesses, and around not only in Wyoming but around the country, and
it gives falconers something to do that actually has to do with their falcon.
There continues to be an interest and an allure with the West. What kind of feedback and reaction do you usually get from readers and Joe Pickett fans?
Well, it really depends where it is. I always find it kind of fascinating. If it's, you know, if I'm in, you know, in the Rocky Mountains, we tend to talk about the issues, questions about, you know, I answered a lot of questions about grizzly bears this last tour, and told some of the stories from Wyoming that it was based on. The further away I go, the questions are more about Wyoming and the Mountain West. And then if I, you know, go overseas, which I do occasionally, not as much anymore, the questions are more about lifestyle and, you know, questions like, does everybody really have that many guns out there? That kind of question. In the East, there's a lot of, you know, there's questions about public lands that I always find interesting and realize that, you know, they don't encounter public lands on a day-to-day basis. And so that, you know, the way I portray them in the book with the different agencies and so many federal agencies involved in this, in the day-to-day politics and culture of the Mountain West, a lot of people find very interesting.
I'm talking with C.J. Box, Three-Inch Teeth, the latest in the Joe Pickett series. The story certainly lent itself to the continuation of the series. Will there be a 25th, an anniversary of sorts, perhaps?
In fact, I'm concluding the first draft on the next book as we speak. I'm honing in on probably the last 40 or 50 pages.
All right.
And it's going to be Nate's Revenge, is more of a Nate Romanowski book, really, than a Joe Pickett book.
How do you develop new themes and storylines? Do they just sort of lend themselves to you, or do you have to kind of search them out?
Well, you know, most of them, you know, as you know, how you've read a lot of the books, you know, that a lot of the issues in the books are things that are being talked about in Wyoming. You know, when it comes to the environmental concerns, resource base, wildlife issues, energy issues, I try to pay attention to what's going on and incorporate those real issues or themes into the books, and hopefully not in an agenda-driven way, but just exploring the issue.
Sure.
So there's so many things that start and culminate in Wyoming and the West and spread out, that in a lot of ways, I always kind of think Wyoming's sort of a trendsetter when it comes to a lot of these issues that become bigger issues other places.
That was Wyoming Public Media's Grady Kirkpatrick speaking with author C.J. Box. Thank you for listening to Open Spaces. The entire show and all of the stories you heard here can be found on our website, wyomingpublicmedia.org. You can also find them wherever you get your podcasts. We also post all of our stories on the station's social media platforms. Thanks to Hannah Haberman, today's audio producer, and Ivy Engel, our digital and social media producer. Open Spaces is a production of Wyoming Public Radio News.